I quickly understood that as long as I listened and continued to be curious, I could learn the lingo in a way that helped me bring it back to addressing customers and non-technical speak. So that was like the biggest one for me, that just like, I don't code. And I think the thing is we need to be able to decode. So maybe it's more useful.
Welcome back to Product Marketing Life, the show where we talk to product marketers about their careers and stories behind them. I'm Sid K. Todd, a senior product marketing manager at Beekeeper, and I'm really excited to share this episode with Michael Robin. Michael Robin is a senior product marketing manager at Thomson Reuters, and we got to talk about her journey from being a contract hire and doing it the right way, how to run an internal audit so you can really understand what your PMM focus should be, and why scripted demos kill deals. Really excited for you to hear the conversation. Let's jump in.
Hey, Michael.
Oh, hey, Sid.
Happy Friday.
Yeah. Sure is a happy Friday. I know we started with a short week, but it feels like a long week when you start with a bank holiday.
That's true. Yeah, the Monday definitely like impacts everything else. I always end up finding myself like missing the date. It's like, wait, today's Wednesday, it's actually Tuesday or whatever. But that's just me. So Michael, I mean, I feel like you have such an interesting life, and we've talked about it here or there, but I am very curious, like outside of product marketing, what are some of your hobbies, interests? What are you up to outside of product marketing?
Yeah, great question, especially as we're rolling into the weekend. So I am in the middle of like thinking about and mentally planning. So if I seem distracted, sorry, mentally planning a Formula One watch party since the drivers are going out to Barcelona this weekend. And so our watch parties involve more than just sitting around and watching the race. Actually, only a handful of people will watch the race. It's more about getting community together and experiencing some of the cuisine from the location that the drivers are driving, since I love to cook, and then a little bit of like, you know, frivolity around the sport. And if people bring their kids, they play with mine, and it's just a good time. Outside of that, I like to garden. I'm working on becoming a bit more of a like a foodscaper, which is like an integration of food you are growing from your land, mixed in with landscaping. So if you think about things like having rosemary available to ward off your mosquitoes, but you can also turn it into spices and teas, or having like certain pollinators around, not just to like encourage bees and things like that, but using like the pollinators are also really great for like warding off deer and other like nuisances in your property to like keep your garden continuing to grow. So anyway, just another like interesting hobby I'm into. And then every now and then my partner will he'll allow me, or I don't know if allow is the right word, but he'll go along with me to karaoke if I find like the right environment. So we're not into like college karaoke bars, but we like to find the old neighborhood ones.
That's fun. Do you have like a go-to karaoke song?
I used to have like the one song because I knew it really well. And it's At Last by Etta James. But recently I've gotten a little more adventurous. And so I haven't really like found the song.
Nice.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine right now is Young Forever by Jay-Z. And it's like a very interesting, oh gosh, what is the word? Like party trick, I guess, because it starts off like really fun and there's a chorus, and then all of a sudden he starts rapping and it's like everyone's just stumbling over words. It's also fun. It's fun. So I would say I'm very much an amateur when it comes to karaoke, but that's cool.
Can you hang? Like, yeah, can you keep up?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there's people who are doing much better. There's probably some mumbling that I'm doing along the way, but
yeah. It's all good. Much better than me, probably. Yeah. Never tried.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it sounds like just from what you're telling me, there you are somewhat of an and person. I always like to like describe myself this way. It's like, yeah, I'm a product marketer and a DJ and a whatever brother, and I do all these other things as well. Similarly, I'm getting the same from you. I also noticed one of the things I've seen online from you is you have a newsletter you're writing. And now I think I saw when I counted over 20 plus editions of What Have We Learned. What's that been like?
Yeah, it's interesting because it actually started as a podcast like back in 2020. And I was like, oh, it's a interesting thing to do to reflect back on what we've learned from things we've overcome or withstood or just like taking notes as we go. And everyone else was starting their podcasts in 2020, and I like burned out super fast. So I really like the title of it. So I kind of kept it around in my head at the end of last year when I was goal setting for 2025. I was thinking I really would like to document my journey into product marketing. And I immediately thought, like, what have we learned? Great title. I want to really share things that I'm studying and learning and I think are interesting. And so in some issues, I'm talking about that. Like I was just starting to read a book about pattern interrupt. And I was like, wow, like that's really, really interesting. And you don't see it that often. But I shared some examples of it. Like I've never tried it before, but you know, here's some things I think are interesting about it. And then in other issues, I share like, you know, what I'm reading, what I'm finding interesting. And then I also share open jobs I've seen, whether they're shared through Exit 5 or the PMA or through some colleagues of mine that are hiring in the product marketing arena. So just trying to help people out. And also like for me, if I ever forget, like I can go back and be like, oh yeah, that's that resource.
Yeah, that's super helpful. Kind of like a digital trail so you can remember, you know, some people call it the second brain. I think that's always super helpful because for me, it helps me just like synthesize experience and have some sort of artifact to go back to. So out of all of these, I'm curious, what is a non-marketing skill or habit that's made you better at your job in product marketing?
Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really thought about a non-marketing skill because I didn't go to like marketing school. So I'm like, well, I think something that was ingrained in me pretty hardcore in culinary school is the idea of mise en place, which is like everything in its place. So to have like preparation, like have everything in order and ready to go so that when you're working through the recipe or working through the plan, there's minimal surprises. And when I think about launch planning or like a feature enhancement or like what's next for this journey that we're going on, I'm aware that surprises are going to happen, especially those of us that work in tech, right? Like I feel like every 3 months or less, we're getting introduced to a whole new nomenclature, technology that's going to speed something up and make things so much easier for our customers. But there's always a way to set yourself up, set your team up, set your organization up to have some preparations in place or at least a communication plan in place when, you know, those surprises come out to get you. So I think like in some cases that has helped me and served me very well. The art of getting things in place.
Yeah. Very cool. And I realize I just totally skipped the intro and your role today, but you mentioned you didn't start in marketing school. Could you kind of take us through that journey, your career arc, and what you are up to today?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think it's actually more fun this way. You just like come in, we're just having a conversation. I travel to Europe at least once a year, and I go to this conference, and they're always like, you Americans are always so like business. Like, what do you do? And I actually like when conversations don't always focus on that. So I went to college to study culinary arts and business management. And when I exited, there wasn't really a good balance for having a restaurant or having a career in food, food and hospitality if I wanted to have a family. So I was already married and 6 months pregnant when I graduated from college. So the family was already on the way. So the career really wasn't going to happen. Over time, just, you know, trial and error with career, I ended up doing some consulting with a startup, an agency, and they very much needed marketing assistance to help fill some gaps in their pipeline. And as I was able to accelerate that, they brought me in full time. I was made an owner and then ended up being president before they sold to another organization. So that was in 2018. And it was like, Google your marketing degree time. I think a lot of us came up in that era where, you know, we either learn from going to meetups and understanding like the 101, like how do you engage with other potential customers or develop brand awareness on social media, which was mostly like Twitter and Facebook at that time, or like LinkedIn was really not a thing for companies back then, or we're Googling things or just like soaking up as much as we can or inventing it ourselves. After that, I ended up being able to go from different startups leading their company's marketing efforts, and whether I was a one-person marketing department or a multi-person marketing team leader, that was more or less my role up until last year when I was laid off. And I was thinking in 2024 when I got laid off, it had been about the third time the company had some downsizing issues, and the first department to go after sales was marketing. So this happened third time, and just like, this isn't great. It's a trend. Maybe it's me, maybe it's them, maybe it's us, but I don't like it. So I did a bit of like soul searching and a bit of curiosity about myself. Like, I can do a lot of these things. Like, I know I can cook and clean and like mow the lawn and garden and sew and be the head of social media and PR and right. But like, what do I really excel at? And what do I like want to get paid for? Is there a market for it? So as I was investigating that side of me, I got a call to consult with a startup called Materia, and they had built a agentic platform, agentic and gen AI platform for accountants and auditors to serve big firms with their research and automating processes and keeping client information in one place. And since I had worked with this friend of mine in the space before, he wanted me to help them launch their product. So I was taking that on part-time and like figuring out who I was simultaneously. Those married up very easily since I was doing research, something I'm naturally good at and I actually really enjoy, blended with marketing and then understanding how to take a technically difficult thing to describe and bring it to like a variety of levels of translation so that it could be used across the organization and our prospects, right? So when you think about like what it takes to build a product, it's all like user and job stories. And it comes down to building like the back end and the front end and most internal stakeholders, and then their buyers and investors. They're interested, but they're not interested to hear about it that way, right? So you've got to massage the messaging a variety of ways. You can't speak to an investor the same way you can speak to a salesperson or a user champion, you know, the person who's going to finance the product. So that all started bringing my curiosity about product marketing, and like I just locked in on it. And I was consulting with Materia throughout the majority of last year, while also like picking or scratching this itch about product marketing with other customers and side jobs, just to see like, is this just Materia? Do I just love this team and the previous coworker that brought me in, or you know, is it the thing I want to do? And it turned out through these other engagements, it was the thing I wanted to do, right? Like, I don't know. I don't see it as like a singular job, which makes it exciting and interesting. Like, I'm not doing the same thing every day. And on the other side of it, you know, I'm able to help create something meaningful. So during that mix, Materia got acquired by Thomson Reuters. And my contract carried over and was helping them continue to build and develop the messaging for the platform. And we had our commercial launch in February. And I was brought in to lead the team selling that platform and be on the product marketing side. So to answer your question, it's a long journey there, but to answer your question, I am the senior product marketing manager at Thomson Reuters, and our product is co-counsel for tax, accounting, and auditors.
Very cool, Journey. I always like to say, like, all of us kind of stumble into product marketing at one time or another. I'm curious, like, along this path, when did you, like, hear about this amazing discipline or whatever you want to call it, and go like, oh, this is the part of marketing that I'm most interested in?
Yeah. Yeah, so I had heard about it probably like 2019, 2020, I want to say. And I think I had practiced what we call product marketing now, back when I was working like in the agency and coming up with messaging and personas and enablement for clients and customers. But that was just part of marketing at the agency. But as I started coming out of the agency and working with different kinds of teams, product marketing started emerging as a role, as a business unit, as a part of either the product team or the marketing team. And then in 2021, at another AI company for this accountant and audit group, I actually managed a product marketer. And so I got to see like how that was very different from other roles I felt like I had done before. And then also how much involvement that particular product marketer had with their stakeholders in product and engineering, and how well they were able to translate that over to the marketing and sales side. So I did a bit of like shadowing and a bit of like my own like exercising of that, because I like research and I like to really understand what the other people on my team are doing. And so he and I would share notes about that. When I left that company, I was hired to do like growth and product marketing for a health tech startup. And so those skills immediately kind of transferred over and were really useful there. But it wasn't like I want to do product marketing, like I'm all in just focusing on this, until I think it was fall of last year, when I recognized how important it was to have someone that ties in those functions together, to have a voice, to have a communicator, and also to have a like champion to keep like moving forward. And I think that's really like the most like unsung things about product marketing is like, well, yeah, we do help with like, you know, packaging and with positioning and right, like the four piece of marketing really lives in product marketing, because positioning, packaging, pricing, and placement, we do a lot of that. But also, like, I think especially in my role right now is moving a lot of us more forward, to keep driving, like, are we positioning to the right people? Do we have the right product market fit? Like, is this still working? Like, we're consistently challenging the status quo, and so that we can ensure like we're still achieving pipeline goals or achieving customer happiness, right, and product market fit. So that's really what like drove me to like, well, this is what I want to do. Like I can look at some actual attainable goals that I can be measured on and fall on the sword if we're not doing well.
I like that. I'm seeing like this trend where earlier you talked about how messaging can really be personalized and you're translating it for lots of different people versus just one. I think sometimes we like look at homepage messaging, like that's a new obsession, right? To like tear down homepages, but that is a snapshot in time for a specific person. And sometimes we forget that, right?
True. Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
And I mean, it also got me thinking, like, as you mentioned, it's a very dynamic role, and it's not just same thing. It's not a snapshot in time that you deliver some sort of positioning or enablement and it's gone. You're continuously reevaluating and trying to drive the business forward. Where can we go next? So those are some of my observations. As you were mentioning your journey, which I think is a very interesting one, you talked about how like your contract kind of transferred as the company got acquired. I wanted to zoom in on that because we talk a lot. I think especially right now, I hear a lot of product marketers, of course, the job market is pretty tricky. And the contract to hire process, I think, is a little bit of a black box. So I'm just curious what that looked like for you, like any considerations product marketers should have if they decide to pursue this path of, you know, signing a contract first and then trying to work full time there, or yeah, how to approach that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a rocky environment right now in a lot of ways, right? Like I'm seeing more open for work than I'm seeing people starting roles, which is super concerning. But in the avenue I pursued, contract to hire, I was actually thinking for quite some time I would be a contractor until I really found a good fit in like the right sector. I was pursuing cybersecurity for a while, so I didn't really consider going back into the like red tech space unless it was cybersecurity. I think when you're going down that avenue, it requires a bit of flexibility and also taking a step back and reflecting on your goals and your why. So the thing for me that changed my ideas about contracting versus going in-house full-time was, as a contractor, I never felt like I got a fuller picture. Like I wanted a fuller picture. And even in-house, right? Like I know I don't have my blinders on. You never get the big picture, no matter where you sit in the organization. It doesn't matter if you're at the top, in the middle, sideways, you'll never get the the full picture. But as a contractor, the organization realizes that they only have you for, you know, a set period of time. So they're going to utilize you for the contract. So it's either job based or hours based, and you're restricted in those confines. I get passionate about what I'm working on and really excited when I see things changing and growing. You know, I want to be a bigger part of them. So when I don't have more pieces of the picture, it's frustrating. So every couple of months, I would think about like, okay, do I need to renegotiate my contract? Do I need to increase or do I need to step away? And like the feeling was I wanted to stay. I wanted to do more. So with moving into Thomson Reuters, the conversation was, do you need a resource, first of all, to assist with this or manage this product marketing effort for this product? Who knows? They would have maybe already had someone. And then also, do I see this as something that I wanted, right? So like how different was this from my idea around going into cybersecurity? Like, will I look back and like beat myself up for like failing that goal, right? And so it was a lot of reflection and reconciliation, but like, yeah, like I can change my mind. And also I learned a lot about myself along the way. Like I can be flexible with my goals because they weren't meeting my needs. And I also learned I got frustrated. Like the less information I had, the more frustrated I was. So that made it hard to really execute well. And I wasn't aware that that would be the case. So like my advice would be to, if you don't like have the time to get to know yourself, which most of us don't, we lose our job and we're like, crap, I need a new one. It's like, dive in, get started, but reflect, right? And try to understand how you're reacting to these unknowns you may not have had to face in the past, because you're given a team or you work on a team and you get a lot of information. On the flip side, if you are a solo person, a solo consultant or an individual contributor, and you're going into a full team, it may be really overwhelming to just get all of that information all at once. So it's just a practice and a balance of awareness. But I would try it if you don't know, if you really just don't know how it's going to go. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen? You might end up loving the situation you created for yourself.
That's a great point. Yeah, I need it to be flexible. And I really like that. Yeah, you kind of have to assess where you're at today and kind of ground yourself in what's possible, I guess, for yourself and then for the current situation as well. Okay, and you mentioned team. So now I'd love to talk about Thomson Reuters. Curious what you do in your current role, what your product marketing charter looks like. What does your team look like?
Yeah. So no 2 days look the same because we're moving really fast. One of our core values is act fast, learn fast. So we don't hold back our engineering team when it comes to like PRs. They just have a queue and it's go, go, go. And we're like, cool, there's a feature enhancement. How do we need to educate based on that, right? So yeah, it's moving really fast because we need to keep up with not just technology, but like regulations and standards, news to keep our constituency informed. So I get a team of people who have like, I've got like a breadth of experience, people who have been with Thomson Reuters for a handful of years and understand like the journey that we're trying to go on now, because that's all they've seen. Just the past couple of years, we've been investing a lot in AI and internally and externally, and trying to build a bridge between the legacy of content and technology that they built and served their customers with, like being modern. And then I have people who've been on my team for decades. And they have knowledge from products that are like basically the rag for all of these AI products that we are serving our customers with. So I actually see that as an amazing benefit. Like, I couldn't ask for a better opportunity to learn from my team. So when I was getting the feeling that I was going to get into this role, I started reading PMM Misunderstood by Richard King, Product Marketing Alliance leader. And he talked about building your team to meet the needs of the organization and really like do an assessment. And then afterward, you know, educate your organization on how the team is made up and, you know, who their counterparts are. And like, it's a long educational roadshow. And I felt like I'd never had the chance to do this before. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right. So I did an assessment across the sales organization, customer success, product, and marketing, which, you know, helped build our go-to-market streams. And I felt that really those were the four areas that needed a spokesperson or a functional individual to speak to them on behalf of product marketing. So we have a member of our team basically aligning with each of those areas. So as an example, our product to product person is our product marketer to product person is responsible for keeping track of adoption and highlighting use cases when we have product enhancements or product launches so that we can quickly identify how to speak to a new customer about them, how to train new salespeople, and how to show support, how to troubleshoot when a customer has a problem. And that can really easily assist or take down product adoption, right? If it fails. Anyway, we've got people aligned across the organization like that. And then I've got a member of the team assisting with data and analytics. So they're the bridge across like the sales pipeline and the product adoption analytics to help us with like database decisions we need to make.
Very interesting. And I think we previously spoke about like you're also collecting customer insights. How do you manage, yeah, like, I guess the marketing and sales piece as well?
Yeah. So on the customer insights piece, the member of that team that reports into or speaks with customer success really leans into their expertise, especially with our early adopters and those who are testing out features that aren't available, like to GA. So that we're ready with the research, you know, those use cases I was talking about on the product side, and also understanding if messaging is really sticking. On the sales enablement side, that's like the liaison that helps bridge the gap between like what our sales team says they're doing and what they're actually doing. You know, they like look at how many times someone's deploying a piece of collateral out of our like digital sales tool, or you know, also while having conversations with people on the sales team, we also look at data from Gong based on like win loss and how those conversations are going, what they think of the product demo or competitors, you know, what persuades them to say yes or no. So it's a really interesting balance between like hearing from sales, but also knowing sales behavior at the same time and using those to help us move forward. And then, with marketing, that's the person that helps ensure that the messaging, that comes from product and translates into plain speak remains consistent. So there, it's a no fluff zone on the website, on the collateral, and in any like front facing material that customers will potentially see.
So really interesting. I mean, I'm no like product marketing veteran, but I've actually never really seen a team that's organized this way. And I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, like, how do you, I'm sure there's, it's tough to find the guardrails, or I guess, I'm not finding the right word. It's like, yeah, like swim lanes, like everyone has like their own kind of areas. And I'm sure there's a lot of crossover. So I'm curious, like, how do you manage that?
Yeah, we talked about that. And it happens often, you know, that like streams are crossing. And how we battled that concern of like, well, you know, so-and-so's in charge of this, so they should be doing like case studies. But like, so why is this guy doing it? Even though we have like certain people that are responsible for certain areas, because we're not only all generalists and we are like a geographically distributed team, we also operate really flexibly. So those two things allow us to go, well, actually, I've worked on a project similar to this, and I'd like to raise my hand and do that. Or like, I'm available during the same time zone as our customer, so I'm more than happy to take the ball and run with it and do the interview, take all the notes, whatever. So like, I'm not having to ask, you know, one of the members of the team to stay up like past their work hours, you know. So we take our like front-facing roles out to the organization very, very seriously, and are working to continue to like align and collaborate, but inside of our team sphere, we operate like totally horizontally. It's just, you know, this is really, you know, your area, but if you need to raise your hand, don't feel bad about it. Or if you know that like this gentleman to your right is much more expert at pricing in that calculator, like you don't need to reinvent the wheel or make it harder for yourself.
I like that. So this is it's an unorthodox look, but I think like I said, it makes a lot of sense because that is at the end of the day, the different people, teams, functions that we collaborate with most often. So I am curious, like what are some other, I think there's like a school of thought that's like, you know, there's a structured approach where there's someone who does competitive or someone who does whatever it is, like specific to integration, specific to product. But yeah, like what other myths about product marketing would you like to see debunked, or like rigid structures that really should be more fluid or dynamic?
Oh, yeah, I think the one for me was the fear of not being technical enough. And like that was something I thought I needed to overcome to get into cybersecurity. Like one of my friends runs an agency for cybersecurity thought leaders, and one of their taglines is like, you know, we know cybersecurity so well, we even know how to spell Kubernetes. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Oof. And that like really made me pause and think. It says a lot about the cybersecurity industry. They are very particular, and I completely understand like the scope of what that industry needs to get done to do the job. But I think that going into other areas, I quickly understood that as long as I listened and continued to be curious, I could, with my curiosity, I could learn the lingo in a way that helped me bring it back to addressing customers and non-technical speak. So that was like the biggest one for me, that just like, I don't code, and you know, I think the thing is we need to be able to decode, so maybe it's more useful.
That one really resonates with me as well. When I started my product marketing journey, I like held myself to some crazy expectation that I needed to be able to be completely technical and know all of this stuff. And I found that it was like very much a mindset switch where when I let go of that expectation, all of a sudden I was becoming technical and like now can do some of that, of course, assisted by AI. But it's just, it's crazy to me that like the second I kind of let go of the expectation and use my own confidence and like focused on my superpowers, which is also, I'd say, like research-based and more focused on the curiosity of it all, it just started to make more sense. And I almost like want to tell the younger version of myself or other product marketers who are just starting, like, you don't have to be technical. Like you said, instead of coding, you have to learn how to decode. You have to learn how to simplify. And, you know, now it is much easier to also become technical. I think it is one of those things you just absorb by being around the product person you're working with a lot, or, you know, meeting with engineers. It starts to click, and being like patient and kind of giving yourself grace. I think I wish I had known I could do that for myself earlier on.
Right.
Yeah, no one tells you this stuff. Except for us. We're telling people that stuff.
Exactly. We're telling people now.
Yeah. Is there anything like that? If you could go back in time and talk to a younger version of yourself, any like words of caution or inspiration you'd give them?
Yeah, I think, there's two things. And like one is, you know, I've got this wall behind me, and they're kind of like a joke about, you know, office inspirational posters, like the hang in there kitty. But they're actually like clever sayings that are musically related. But at the top, I have a big cassette tape that says, pause if you must, but don't stop, right? And that's like a mantra to help me keep going. I think if I were to tell my younger self that, and like why, like pausing, there's nothing to beat yourself up over. Like that's natural. It's okay. And sometimes it has helped me be stronger for what's next, right? Be ready for what's next. And then the second one is really a skill I'm very much still learning to do, is just to collaborate and like pick up the phone and reach out, or like start up a Teams chat, you know, send an email, whatever it is, to just get more information. So it's that continuous cycle of not knowing enough, but when you're not invited to the party, you need to create your own. So like some people just don't know like that you wanted to go to the party. Some people don't know that you needed that information. So like you need to seek it out. It's not, you know, anything about you in particular. It's just, there's a lot of things to be done in an organization. So I think it's product marketing's role, and it's hard for us because we're always feeling like the last one in the organization, like, oh, who are you guys? Oh, we had to tell you about that. I was like, yeah. But like, yeah, it is our role to really get the details, or if I were to put a culinary spin on it, get the ingredients to make the recipe and serve it well.
I like that a lot. Okay. So that brings us, I think, to a solid conclusion. What I always ask our guests as a last question, if you've tuned in to the first few episodes that are now live with me as the host, is I like to ask, product marketing is blank. Can you fill in the blank?
Yes, I can. Product marketing is bonkers. Bonkers. Mostly, you know, because it does sometimes feel like, where did all this come from? It's just insanity. But it's my type of bonkers. I'll take it.
I love it. Awesome. Well, this has been a great combo, Michael. Where can people learn more about you? And I'll just plug, you also wrote an article for PMA about how scripted demos kill deals. So definitely go check that out. But yeah, where can people find you and learn more about you?
Yeah. So I lurk on LinkedIn. So you can find me there. It's on LinkedIn, obviously. But it's like /MichaelRobin-. That's where I lurk, or you can find me on my website, which is michael-robin.com.
Awesome. You have a website. I need to get on them. It's like a very old Notion page.
Notion's still cool. I love it.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.